And let's go back to Philadelphia and bring in the great Extra Bags with two G's, Andy Baggerly. Good morning.
Good morning, Marty. How's it going?
Oh, it's going good. And for you, going back to Philadelphia, there are some rituals that you go through when you go to Philadelphia. I thought I saw a picture of you doing a Rocky thing the other day.
Yeah, you know, been around the circuit a few times, and some cities you go back to, and it's like, okay, that's. I go to Cincinnati, I catch up on sleep, I hit the gym, and I do my expenses. And you go, there are some cities that you think, you know, I'd like to linger here for a little longer. And I always want to linger in Philadelphia a little longer. There's just so many great little nooks and crannies and places to explore. And if you like getting out and going for a run, you can run along the Schuylkill River Trail and climb the Rocky Steps. And for me, the cool part about that is okay, you know, you've done it once, you don't really need to do it again. But then you see families and kids and dads, and they're running up the steps and laughing, and they know that they're making a memory there, and that's just good. That's the stuff that feeds the soul.
Yeah, very good. And it was Donut Day yesterday, National. Did you participate in that?
I did. Went to Federal Donuts, which is locally very well known. And if I can, I'm going to try to get into Zahav tomorrow, which is the sort of flagship restaurant of Michael Solomonov, who's sort of the big restaurateur here in the area. And it is fantastic, Marty. If you're ever in Philadelphia and you like Middle Eastern food, Israeli food, go to Zahav. It's one of the best restaurants I've been in the country.
Very good. All right. What's your favorite donut before we leave the food area?
You know what? I actually kind of like the savory donut, if you ever had one. They're pretty tasty. They make sort of like a buttermilk honey one that they serve with their fried chicken there. And I'll take that over the sugary one. Those are delicious.
Well, I'm getting hungry. All right. Well, the Giants got hungry. Giants got hungry last night. And, you know, they ended up against a team that really has just been falling apart lately. They got off to a good start. But the top of the order, Andy, and, you know, you can fantasize a little bit. If only this top of the order could do anything like that, boy, the offense would look differently. Span 17 for his last 27 at Citizens Bank Park, and Nunez hit the ball well last night. So I'll let you start off at the top of the order. Can something like this continue even a little bit?
Well, you know, I think that it's too much of a trend to ignore, both in the games this season when they've, you know, sort of broken out, and even going back over the last several years. I mean, how many times have we talked about the Giants' record with and without Angel Pagan? And, you know, maybe that wasn't a function of Angel necessarily per se as much as, you know, who they had in the leadoff spot when he wasn't there and what little they got out of them. And I think you really, really start to understand that this offense without a whole lot of home run hitters, especially playing in the ballpark they play in at home, you have to get on in the one and two spots. And I think the best offense that they've had since Barry Bonds retired was in 2012, the year that Angel was probably having his best year as a Giant, and Melky Cabrera was leading the majors in hits and runs scored when he got suspended in April. So, you know, I just think that when they look at trying to rebuild this offense into a team that can score five runs a game instead of, you know, two and a half, three runs a game, it's going to have to start with having a big-time, healthy, durable, athletic, productive presence at the top of the order. And, you know, I think that Nunez is hitting, I think, 375 over his last 16 games, and he's going to stay in that two spot. That's what Rispoci said after the game last night.
You did a great article this week on the Giant farm system. You took a lot of time talking with Bobby Evans. Is there anyone coming up who could be a leadoff hitter?
Well, that's a good question. I really can't think of anyone off the top of my head. You know, it's not like they don't have any talent in the minor leagues. They have some interesting guys. I mean, Austin Slater just came up, and we'll see what he's capable of. And Chris Shaw is certainly looking like somebody who is on the right path. But I don't know if we're going to see him this season since they don't have to put him on the 40-man to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. But, you know, they have some interesting players in the system. But the biggest reason that every single club, when I wrote the story a couple days ago, was in last place, every single minor league affiliate bringing up the rear, was a real deficit of lower level pitching. And they've had to advance a lot of people up soon just because they don't have enough inventory in their system. And, you know, we could go on and on and on why that's the case. But, you know, I think when you look at the leadoff type guys, Not really. And to be honest, when they have made some evaluations of those kinds of people and drafted them high, it hasn't really turned out. And I'm thinking of, Gary Brown is obviously probably the most prominent example of that. And no question, I think they're going to have to hit on another one or two of these guys or find a way to acquire one. And I'll tell you what, one guy I really like, and I think it would take a ton to pry him away, but if they could find a way to get Christian Yelich from the Marlins, he's a guy who I think would just fit fantastic as a Giant. But you know, that's a little bit pie in the sky. The Marlins obviously like him, and he's really young, and he's controlled. And but, you know, if there's any way they can get creative and acquire somebody like that, I think they've got to, you know, turn over every stone to do that.
Andy Baggerly is with us. Of course, he's a beat writer for the Bay Area News Group, covers the Giants at Extra Bags on Twitter with two G's. I said this morning, and again, you watch a game last night, and Eichhoff had absolutely nothing, and the Philly middle relief was a disaster. You watch the Giants win 10-0, and everybody's getting hitting and block pitches, a shutout. And, you know, you fantasize a little bit. And I sort of said this morning, I said, you know, you can make your vacation plans for October, but I wouldn't put the deposit down until July 1st, because you look at the Giants starting pitching and where they rank, Andy, you know, in the league, and they're six now in the league. And, there's still 10 games back in a loss column with 106 to go. So I say give them 30 more days. Give them till July 1st.
Well, yeah, what makes it tough is that the rest of the NL West has zoomed away from them, and that's three teams, and that's all three playoffs. You know, spots. Right. So, you know, it's not like the second wild card team is bobbing along at two games over 500 right now. So, you know, that's what makes it kind of tough to envision. You know, I've said all along, if they can get within shouting distance of 500, you know, by the All-Star break, then, you know, they've got three at San Diego, and then 20 of their next 23 are in the Bay Area. And that's when they could position themselves. But, you know, they've got to, they've got to get, you know, out of this hole first, and that's easier said than done. And you know, that means you've got to win series at home, and they weren't able to have a winning home stand their last time out. Played a very good Nationals team. It means, you know, getting greedy and sweeping the teams that you should step on, like the Phillies. I mean, not only was it 10-0, but the Giants left 17 runners on base, which was their most in a 9-inning game since 1943. So, I mean, that tells you just how completely one-sided that game was last night.
Well, Schoolboy Rowe liked to pitch in traffic. So that, you know, the old Schoolboy, that's the way he used to pitch for the Phillies back then. So
I'll take your word for that, Marty.
Right, okay. You know, it's funny.
You probably knew him when he was an actual Schoolboy.
Well, Schoolboy got that nickname. He was about 15, and he was already on a man's team already. So that's how they called him, Schoolboy Rowe. He was very good for the Tigers at one point. All right, Andy is with us. Hunter Pence, and part of my thought process this morning, I said, well, look, you got Span and Nunez. Let's assume they're healthy and they can play, and that's a big if they stay in there. Then you get the Belt, Posey, Crawford thing. Now, Pence, I would imagine, Andy, you could see him today or tomorrow. You know how he operates. You put him in the sixth spot, then panic, then the Slater-Caixte business. And that's kind of the lineup they thought they'd come out of spring training with.
Well, and don't forget, Jared Parker is going to start playing games real soon, too. And he literally is the guy they thought would be out there in left field. And, you know, it started off a little rough, but he was just starting to come around when he got hurt. So, you know, he could definitely be given another shot as well. You know, that's kind of the funny thing is Arroyo's up, Slater's up, Caixte's up, and you're thinking, okay, the Giants are, it's June, they know where they are in the standings, here comes the youth movement, here come the kids, we're looking toward the future, and whoa, wait a second, Arroyo might be going down, Pence is coming back, Span's going to play, Panic's going to play, Crawford's going to play, Posey's going to play, Pence is getting back. Did I say that already? This is not a team that's ready for a youth movement, that they have too many pieces in place that are, you know, long-term pieces. Now, whether they become sellers and they decide to blow it up a little bit and maybe even look to trade an established guy or two, you know, they certainly showed with Matt Duffy, they were not, Bobby Evans was not afraid to pull the trigger and trade somebody who was seen as a kind of a core piece. But, you know, that's sort of where these next couple weeks are going to be really interesting, because the tougher that, this month is for the Giants, that the more likely it'll be that we'll see some big changes at the trade deadline.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just thinking, you know, get the lineup that they thought they were coming out of spring training with, and if they stay healthy, let's see what they can do. Because, Andy, the starting pitching, I mean, this is Ty Block, and I realize he hasn't gone around the league once yet. You know, it's incredible. But he takes the ball, throws the ball, no hand wringing, no hand through the hair. You know, the guy just looks like he knows what he's doing out there. He looks pretty good.
Yeah, I kind of took a deep dive into Ty Block in my game story. Some interesting numbers in there. One is, you might not realize it, but the Giants are suddenly third in the majors behind the Nationals and Cardinals in quality start percentage. So that means that, you know, they're getting that base building block to win a game. Their pitchers are not pitching them out of the game as often as a lot of teams are getting that done to them. So, and Ty Block has been a huge part of that, you know, and you really, I think, have to respect a guy who gets his brains beat in Cincinnati and gives up 10 runs, first Giant starter to do that in. And what does he do? His strike percentage goes up in his next five outings. He's actually throwing more strikes, and not only that, but all five were quality starts. And so Ty Block's got a lot to do with that quality start percentage. And you know, he's also the first Giant rookie to win four starts in a row since Madison Bumgarner. And since he's essentially replacing Bumgarner in the rotation right now, it's a handy thing to do. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be very long that we're going to call Ty Block Bumgarner's replacement in the rotation. He's just going to be a guy in the rotation. I mean, he's certainly shown that he belongs there, and I think he and Bumgarner probably will be rotation mates once Bumgarner comes back for, you know, the foreseeable future in this franchise.
Well, it gives them flexibility as far as trading situations if Block is the real deal. As I say, I like to see someone go around the league a couple of times before doing that, but he shows every...
Right. And he needs to pitch better on the road, too. I mean, this is a big one for him, not only his first shutout, but he has pitched a lot of his starts at AT&T Park. But you're right. You know, if maybe they're a little more open-minded to trading a Matt Moore, who still has a lot of trade value given his controllable contract, and they could really find some guys that they could move that could, honest to goodness, help to restock their system. You know, if Block's emergence makes them think that Moore might be a little more expendable, or at least make them willing to listen to see what he could get for him, and see if it's worth their time, then you know, that could be big.
Absolutely. Andy, I don't know if I asked you this or not, but when do you expect Pence back?
Well, I wouldn't expect him back today just because it's a 4 o'clock game and he played last night for San Jose. I don't know if he's on his way here now. He might be. Bruce Bochy certainly left it open that Pence could be activated this weekend. So that would be tomorrow with the day game. I just think it's more likely we would see him in Milwaukee. But, you know, when Pence says he's ready, he usually sends Bochy some text message like, I'm a ridiculous weapon. You know, I need to be in there. And Bochy trusts him. So he gives in. But, you know, I can guarantee you that given what he's been through the last couple of years, they're not going to activate him unless they're, you know, pretty much certain that he's past this and that he's not going to put himself at unnecessary risk, because they know it's not worth it in his case. And so, you know, I would guess probably knowing him and knowing the situation, we could see him on Sunday. And if not, then probably Monday in fine Wisconsin.
Very good. All right, Cueto, Ben Lively today. I did a little research on Ben Lively. He's a right-hander and he's had some good minor league numbers, though 88 to 91, so he better be pretty careful. But Cueto on the other side, Andy, the blisters, is that still an issue for him?
I think it's ongoing. I think it bothers him in some starts more than others. It might be more a pitch selection thing. And you know what? It'll bother him more in warm weather, and it is going to be a little sticky up there today, but not too bad. It looks like it's about 75 degrees. So, you know, I think it's just something they're watching from start to start. Now he's learned to pitch with it a little bit, but obviously he would love to just get past it. And he has not indicated that it's something that is completely resolved, but I think it's more manageable than it was before, if that makes sense. I mean, you know, Cueto has pitched better the last couple outings as well, and he's got a lot to do with that quality start percentage too. And you know, every once in a while, you need a pitcher just to go out and shove, especially against a team that will get themselves out for you, like the Phillies will do, chasing a lot of pitches. And so, you know, I would expect Johnny to operate around the periphery of the strike zone to start and see if these guys get themselves out. And if they do, just keep going that way.
Very good. Andy, great report. I'm so glad you brought up that quality start stat. I've been talking about that for about a month now. I said that's you need quality starts. Something they couldn't get earlier in the year, and they're starting to get it now. That's why I say it's not hopeless, but we'll see.
Yeah. No, you're right. And when they don't have it for a series like that series at Coors in April or the series in Cincinnati, then it gets real ugly fast.
Yeah.
But, you know, and the last thing I'll mention about Block is only 4 home runs allowed.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, and I wrote this in my story, he's kind of the antidote to what's going on around baseball. The home run rate is the highest it's ever been, including the steroid era. And he's a guy who kind of finds a way to operate below that launch angle that everyone's talking about and that uppercut swing that so many hitters are trying to develop. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Dave Rigetti starts telling everybody, hey, let's start sinking it more. Let's start operating below this launch angle that everybody wants to get. And guys like Ty Block could become pretty valuable.
Yeah, if you have Phil Cuzzi who's calling that low strike, that doesn't hurt either.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, last night. Yeah, well, they hunt for strikes down. And, well, that's the whole thing. They want to raise that up so you don't have as many of those low strikes. That's part of the whole argument of the of Major League Baseball over the winter, that they're going to readjust that strike zone. But we'll see. I agree with you. Walk, strikeout, home run. That's what you get.
Yeah, exactly. And they want to speed up the game, but they also want more offense. So, yeah. You know. Sometimes it's not a buffet, Marty. You can't just pick and choose everything you want.
We'll end it with that. A good food report from you. Extra, thanks so much as always, and look forward to seeing you.
Thanks, Marty. Always appreciate joining you.
All right, very good. That's Andy Baggerly. Always love having him on. All right, more coming up, KMBR 680, the sports leader.